Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
That is effing unrealistic, and that's why I've always hated the Big Blue Boy Scout, because that would never, ever, 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 ever happen. So I liked this one. I felt connected to this Superman. He wasn't the Big Blue Boy Scout. He was a Superman, and that's why I liked it.
You're a monster.
Exactly. I don't really care about Earthlings. I should have let a busload of kids die.
Hold on.
I'm a man.
Gotta blow the whistle. We gotta break this up.
Ridiculous.
Pick your sticks back up, boys.
I can't believe I'm sparring with Michael Bay's fan club.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we talk about all the awesome things that happen in the comic book world that make a difference, that help you out, or make you laugh, or anything in between. I'm the Rock God of Podcasting, Charles McFall, back from Chicago and the Pokey Fest that didn't quite happen. Along with me today is Paul Klotz.
Yeah! Ugh! I'm done.
I'm not sure what that was.
That was just me getting as hype as you are.
Okay, awesome. Well, there was some pre-show banter. I wasn't sure if someone was kicking it. Over to my digital left is Chris Wisdom.
Hey.
Yeah, go for the low-hanging fruit, Chris.
My line.
Yeah. So we've got some interesting things going on today. First off, why Infinity War's official footage hasn't been released for the public. Now, this is something that happens. We were just talking about this. We launched this show right at the end of SDCC 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
No, a year ago.
No, 2 years ago. We recorded it 2 years ago.
Holy cow. Because it's Ant-Man, I remember.
For a few months, yeah.
Yeah, and I was crying about, just give me the trailers. Because horrible cam, shaky cam was showing up for the trailers then. But they do this. It's a thing. But somebody talk about what's going on with the Russo brothers and why we don't get to see the trailer.
Well, so Joe Russo came out and he commented, and I'll just read you the quote. It said, "You know, all I can say is that when the footage comes out, we want it to be exactly right. So we are taking our time and working on that footage because, as you can imagine, the levels of visual effects in these movies are unprecedented, and there are certain things in this footage at Comic-Con that work specifically for a Comic-Con audience. But when we go wide to a wide audience, we have to make sure that footage works for a wide audience. So we're hard at work right on that right now. I'm not going to give a timeline on it because I want to surprise people, but, you know, hopefully they're patient with us." And I hate that answer. I hate that answer. If you want to take time to get it right, why not get it right for the Comic-Con people and let them have it 24, 48 hours before the rest of the world? But don't go the Wednesday, or the Thursday, excuse me, because we're recording on the Thursday after San Diego Comic-Con 2017, and we still haven't seen anything other than shaky cam, somebody's cell phone footage from the event.
Well, they try every time, not like the Russo brothers, but the generic they, the shot callers, because I remember the first time, two years, Klotz? Really, wasn't last year?
No.
It was 2 years.
Holy cow, man, We've been at this a little while. That's pretty awesome. Happy anniversary, Klotz. Screw you, Chris. You're a newbie.
You know what? It might be closer to... Is it closer to 3 years? Because the first show I was on was for Force Awakens, guys, which was in 15. It was December of 15.
I don't know, man. It's crazy.
Man, we've been doing this a fair bit of time.
Yep. So nobody cares but us. We're having this internal conversation. Everybody's like, move on! Hit the skip button. But the point is, when we first did this, it was a DC trailer. I think it might have been Suicide Squad. I don't think it was BVS. I think it might have been Suicide Squad trailer.
No, I think it was BVS now that I think about it.
It might have been, but it's shaky cam is all we were getting. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we get it. You give them an exclusive because they're there and they get to see it first. But a week later, who cares anymore? Give it to the world. And I don't understand why shot callers do this. And Klotz, you said you might have some words on this subject.
Well, I guess one of the things I thought of immediately was how we talked about the Justice League trailer recently. And particularly when you're discussing visual effects, how bad Cyborg looks, for example, that's a really good example of how you can derail your project by having bad visual effects in place. You know, I don't think those are, Lord, I hope those are not finalized visual effects for that film, or it's going to be rough. You know what I mean? Like, it's because he looks real bad in those early trailers. And so I feel like that's kind of what they were getting at, is like, we don't want to show you like super rough stuff. We want to show you kind of completed shots and everything.
Now, there's something to be said, Chris. I'm going to come back to you, Klaus, sorry, but there's something to be said, because Chris's argument was, well, if I paid my ticket and I flew all the way out there, it's good enough for me, but not the world. But there's something to be said about con mentality, right? You're in a room full of 3,000, whatever Hall H holds. I'm assuming this was a Hall H.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's 4,000.
So 4,000 excited fans, the room goes dark, the screen goes up. You get caught up in the fervor of seeing it for the first time and seeing it with a bunch of people who want to see it. I don't know that anybody would walk away. Even I can say, even being in the room, I don't know if I would have picked it apart. Because I was in the room for Arrow panel when they did the preview to this little, no, the season before last. So it was 2 years ago I was in the room for Arrow. And they did this trailer that nobody had seen in the world. And everybody went nuts. And then later I watched it. They released that one, the actual trailer, to the world later. And I watched it again. I went, oh, no, that's kind of crap. But in the room, I was like, oh, this is amazing. So so go ahead, Claude. It's about I just wanted to offset his argument.
Well, and I'm not asking for a rough cut. I'm not asking for something that's not ready to be digested by the general public. I'm saying finish the GD trailer before you put it out at Comic-Con. Give them the first look at the finished trailer that you're going to release 48 hours later to the world. Go to Comic-Con with a finished product. Why is that so hard? I'm not asking for the finished movie. I'm asking for the finished 45 seconds.
Yeah. You know, a good example of that done well very recently. I know I mentioned this game that I play fairly often, Warframe. They're an indie developer, but they've really kind of transcended the free-to-play genre that they develop for and everything. And they've just had, earlier this month, they had their second, what they call TennoCon, which is their specific one game, just them. It's in London, Ontario, Canada, con for their show. And they have several thousand people go out for it. And so, for that game, like the player base was getting kind of frustrated the last few months because we were getting nothing really significant as far as news or previews or anything. I mean, we got some stuff, don't get me wrong, but like it was kind of dry, you know what I mean? And then they hit, like at the con, they hit the fans with the business. And basically they showed that they were going to expand the game into this open world area that is something that they've never done. You know what I mean? And it was such a huge step for them. And they're like, so, you know, we spent the last 6 months working on this and we didn't say anything about it or even remotely hint that this was coming because we wanted you to get a good look at it. And I'll tell you, the preview trailer for it and the fact that they did gameplay and everything live on stage, they nailed it. Like, that is it's not quite like, you know, release presentation level. Nailed it.
I thought you mean like watching on a tiny iPod screen.
Yeah, no. But it was really, really good. You know what I mean? Like, it was really well done, and they got to showcase what they had worked on, and they nailed it because it looked great. It had new rendering and everything for the game and stuff. It was just like, and that's the example of what you're talking about, Chris. Like, the people went nuts there too. You know what I mean? The people who were in attendance, because it was live streamed as well. They're like, you hear the crowd just go, what? And like, everybody's losing their shit. You know what I mean? Like, it was crazy. And, you know, so the people who were there are always going to have that experience. They're always going to, you know what I mean, have been there for the big reveal of this huge new content thing. Because they're already there for the thing that they're super passionate about, you know, this game in this case. But when Comic-Con, it's, you know, whatever comics or shows or whatever you're into, you're super passionate about this stuff. You bought your tickets, you got there, you got to see things first and in person, you got all that hype. It doesn't matter at all to those people who were there, that it was live streamed at the same time, so people at home got to see it at the same time, or that the video was uploaded to YouTube within 24 hours and people were able to pull it, you know, from there and all of that. It doesn't matter.
It does
at
look
all.
Sharp. I'm looking at it now, man. It looks really sharp.
Right. And so it's just, it's one of those things, you know, it's like they built the hype by showing, it's not the completed product, you know, like you're saying, Chris, it's not the finished product. It's, what they're showing looks great though. And they, you know, they're not just showing some rough garbage. And I think that's, there's some validity in that. So I really feel like maybe Marvel missed the mark here by not being prepared with something that they could show the whole world quickly on the heels.
And I really feel like all the studios are just hitting around that target. And the first one to do it is going to be the ones that the fans are going to thank for a while. Because none of them are doing it yet. They all keep making the same damn mistake. Because, I mean, how much praise did we pile on Deadpool when that trailer broke? And then within the day of that breaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they went ahead and put it on the internet. Because they realized the success just from the leaked test footage for the movie that got that movie made. They realized that they had something there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were missing at least half of that trailer, and we went nuts over it. Because it spoke to the quality of the film without the rendering. We knew it was a leaked trailer. We knew it didn't have the rendering. But it just spoke to the quality. And that's what – when they hold stuff back like this, that's what makes me go, is your product not good enough? You know? I mean, one of the jokes about the MCU is that every story is exactly the same. You know, are we going to just get more of the same? I don't understand. Why are we not? When you hide something, it tells me you have something to hide. Does that make sense? Yeah, and it's, I don't know.
Well, you know, there's one other thing that I kind of noticed. I've actually noticed in a couple of films lately. And maybe you guys have noticed this as well. And this is kind of getting off on a tangent that we didn't really plan for. But have you noticed that it's starting to become kind of obvious when they're on, like, a soundstage? In these big budget films now, and they're not like on a physical look. Like I'm noticing it sometimes. A lot more, and it's starting to get a little jarring. You know what I mean? And I'm noticing that, like in particular with the superhero films, it stands out to me because I'm like, the world doesn't feel as vibrant anymore when I'm watching like some of these newer films, and I'm seeing the seams in the production. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, how are they pumping out, you know, 2-3 Marvel films a year, for example? You know what I mean? And the answer is it's because they're like, it was really noticeable in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is actually a really good example. You could just tell that was like 95%, you know, soundstage with green screen backdrops and a couple of foreground props and like, you know, basically minimal effort as far as like trying to shoot on location or anything like that. And it kind of stood out to me and I was like, And so I feel like they end up having to rely so much on the visual effects that they're kind of getting trapped by that. You know what I mean?
I will go ahead and say I'm still the believer. And so it's rare that I notice those things. And while you're right, I mean, they did not shoot on location. There's obviously they didn't shoot on location. I still felt mostly engulfed in the world of Guardians too. So I would say I'm not noticing it as much as you are.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Chris?
I'm noticing it, and it kind of goes back to a conversation that I had with a friend that talking about just comic book movies in general, and we kind of got on a side discussion and a comparison of differences in movies and jumps that people have made from one movie to another. It all stemmed around the newest Thor movie coming out and how it's such a departure from the first one, which was, you know, much more Shakespearean. Is where they drew a lot of inspiration. And this one is, you know, balls out a sci-fi action movie. But the question came up is, why do we allow current day superhero movies to get away with what we crapped all over George Lucas for those prequels? And I'm like, well, because if you're going to rely on green screen and not tell a good story, then you're not, mm-hmm. you don't have, you're missing out in two factors of performance in a movie. So
right,
that's why
the George Lucas argument doesn't hold here for me, because what we lost was the heart of what Star Wars was. with those prequels. So it wasn't that it was nicely rendered and everything's clean compared to the dirty, realistic world of before. It was like everything basically was tossed out of what we knew from the previous movies.
The other thing with the prequels is they were kind of overly ambitious in relying on the visual technology at the time, because it doesn't age well. You know, in the same way, Chris, you know, you like to always criticize the first X-Men trilogy, and fairly so. The first X-Men film looks really rough. You know what I mean? Like, the visual effects are rough. You know, not quite the first Blade movie rough, but rough.
Mm-hmm.
That at all.
I just sat down last night for the first time with my daughter, who's, you know, like 19 months old, and showed her Toy Story for the first time. And good Lord, I almost barfed at how horrible that movie looks. It looks like animatics that you would produce prior to a movie, you know, so that you can show an action sequence how it works. That's how bad those graphics look now. And I know that that's a horrible thing to say. And I'm just like, how did? And so I'm sure I can't go back and look at those early Pixar short films, because I would never fathom how those won an Oscar in this day and age. And I mean, there are certain things. There's advancements in technology that you understand why it doesn't look as good today, why it doesn't hold up, but it is in stark contrast. I can't tell you the last time I saw Toy Story, but it was pretty jarring to see that quality.
I get that, yeah. I don't know. It's, you know, we get what we get, and it's good or bad on its own merits, and you know.
Well, yeah,
it'll fly. It'll be
well. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 was still a really fun movie. You know what I mean? And
yeah, agree.
It's noticeable. If you know what to look for, that stuff stands out, but it doesn't ruin the entire film. It's when like we were talking about with the prequels, when the story is kind of weak, and like Star Wars, what Star Wars has to fall back on is those beautiful set pieces and those, you know, the technology and the aliens and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, which is the typical backbone of sci-fi, is like, you know, even if the plot is a little hokey sometimes, it's the world building and all that stuff that people can really geek out on. And the prequels, that was a really rough part, and so it wasn't providing any structure, you know? Whereas with the modern Marvel films, for example, it's not so bad because they managed to do a really good job of blending, and the stories and the characters themselves are really solid. So you're really enjoying the performances from the characters on screen, and it's not such a thing that really stands out to you. It kind of like calls out to not to dump all over DC even further, but like that's one of the big issues with the Snyder-esque. You know, here's the thing: like Wonder Woman got a lot of praise from people, and I've been one of the few people who's kind of like I appreciated what Wonder Woman was great for, but at the same time, the tail end of that film was all soundstage green screen work, and it looked real bad to me. You know what I mean? And it stood out to me, and it really kind of ruined an otherwise fantastic and beautiful film. You know what I mean?
There's a psychological principle that really might be at play for you here, is what, okay, the internet changes it to what has been seen cannot be unseen. Mm-hmm. But it's once you are aware of something that's going on, it cannot work on you very well. I know this is on green screen, I go in looking for the world. And I think that's why my brain's not aware of it. Real quick, Georgia Tech did a psychological experiment with volunteers. And they would talk to your family and whatever, this and that and the other. And they were researching implanted memories, right? Mm-hmm. And they could convince you of a memory that actually didn't happen with your family's help, basically. And they were doing the scientific research. But the thing that they found most interesting is basically once you understood that that's what they were doing, they could not convince you of any kind of fake memories at all. So I think maybe that's playing in, is you see the rough edges, you know, it's on a green screen, and maybe going into any movie that, you know, they didn't shoot Valerian on Valerian, Planet of Thousand Cities, right? You know? So I think there's ways to do it better. I think Rogue One is a great example,
yeah,
of real world effects. And I think that's the middle ground there.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Rogue One was a really good example of, even if they were doing a lot of soundstage work, the sets looked really good. And, you know, everything was very carefully sculpted to look and fit the you know, the overall feel of the franchise. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I mean, it's a shout out to people. I mean, it's the modern filmmaking age. You know, things have changed. And obviously, not every film can afford to shoot on location, you know, and have these huge set pieces. Like, I think of, like, in particular, like, late 90s, early 2000s, like, everybody was filming on location all around the world and filming these really, like, all, especially the fantasy type stuff, like your Troys and your Gladiators and stuff like that, like, huge set pieces, tons of extras, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's just not really feasible anymore a lot of times. And so, you know, yeah, we have to accept that to a certain degree. But yeah, if your story isn't holding up, it becomes really, really obvious.
Well, you mentioned you references Snyderverse. There's not going to be much more of the Snyderverse going forward, apparently. I thought I heard Chris starting to jump in. but Zack Snyder's future at Warner Brothers DC Movies is limited. I love this line, right? Limited at best. That's the Paul Klotz professionalism. Dunzo at worst is the rock god style right there. you know what? I'm not even going to touch this article. If y'all want to reference it. But Klotz, you really feel like this is actually the end result of some bad ways they handled things previously with him and his situation with his family.
Yeah, you know, we reported on it back in May when the Snyders stepped away, you know, citing that they were going to grieve for Zach's 20-year-old daughter who sadly committed suicide. We had a little bit of speculation at the time. I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or if we talked about it, like, off-air. But we speculated a little bit, like, is this, like, obviously this is a really sad and horrible thing to have happen, but also obviously Snyder is not doing so well, you know, with the DC films, like, things are really kind of imploding all around them.
It was a great gamble. It didn't go in the direction they needed it to.
Sure.
It's just not working.
Yeah, things weren't panning out, and it was very clear that his involvement on pretty much all levels with all these films was part of that, you know? And so I believe I raised the idea of, like, you know, I'd really hate to see them use this really sad thing in Zack's life as the, like, free get out of this project without any drama card. You know what I mean? Like, and now it's almost starting to feel like maybe it was used that way, which is, I find it kind of distasteful.
You know, well, so it was a real thing that really happened, but perhaps both parties took time to realize that this was the best way out.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps, because I like playing devil's advocate. It's kind of my thing. Perhaps a tragedy, man, it changes your life. I mean, sure. You guys know I went through the thing with my mother-in-law, and it really has. You could feel, not that we're inherently changed as people. We still are who we are, still a happy household. But the word I want to use is bent. The bent of the house, and I don't know what that means. It just feels like the right word. The bent of the house is, or the house is bent. I don't know. Something's weird here a little bit. It's not, if you had been here before and then you came after the event, you would know something has happened. And for me, I still go on. I still love what I do. But perhaps for him, he was going, you know what? I'm tired of the backlash. I'm tired of my vision not being what everybody else wants. And maybe at the time he stepped back, it wasn't a permanent one, but maybe now he's like, you know what? I just want a better life, and I'm going to do something different. Who knows? I mean, I did that with my daughter when she was born. I was on medical leave to stay home with my wife, and during that time, I decided to find a different job. And so when I went back to that job, I turned in my notice, and I didn't plan on doing that when I left. So I don't know. You never know. But I get where you're coming from, Klotz, for sure. About the, yeah. It feels distasteful a little bit.
I really hope that wasn't the plan. The way I see it is basically like, if something traumatic happens like that and you're stepping away for that reason, 100% behind you. If the company and you are using that as an opportunity to pull you off of something that is not succeeding because of your involvement or for whatever reason, and you're not being honest about the nature of that, that's where I get a little, you know, annoyed. I find that very distasteful. I find it very dishonest. I really feel like Warner Brothers and the DC films in particular, like, they really need to accept responsibility for their shortcomings if they're taking actions to correct them, because that restores brand faith. You know what I mean? When you say, okay, the Snyder's involvement in these films has been lackluster, and I'm not I don't want to say that they're bad. Like, I know everybody likes to dump on the DC films. Obviously, they had a vision. They tried to execute it. You see that there's a lot of love in the film, you know, like a lot of... Mm-hmm. It's in, even though it misses the mark for like Chris and even myself, as I've come around to it.
Chris is holding his breath. No,
I wanted to qualify this. You can tell that the Snyders were committed to the vision the way they saw it. There was love and passion for their version of the story and the characters they wanted to tell.
And it just didn't work.
It didn't hit with everybody else. So I feel like, you know, if Warner Brothers is going to distance themselves from the Snyders, because that didn't work, and I think that's the right play, I feel like they need to say that and just be very clear about it. You know what? That vision didn't really work out. We're reassessing, and this is what we're doing. We're taking steps. You know, 100%, that's what happened in the early days of the MCU when they started to build a universe around those first couple films that became the foundation for the MCU, is they were like, you know what, we know, like, for example, the Ang Lee Hulk film, they're like, we know that was bad, we get it, you know, we're going to try again, you know, we're going to do Iron Man, we're going to do Hulk, you know what I mean? And like, and as things started to come together, they were like, they started to promise more, you know what I mean? And they're like, all right, so these are going to be interconnected, and we're building something here. I think that's the way to go, and I think, you know, DC tried to run before they could walk, and now they have to fix all of our feelings about it. You know what I mean? They need to reassure us that there's something to look forward to it. Cause right now their track record is not so good. They have one successful film. I mean, these films are making money, but they're not critically successful.
Right. They're monetarily, but they're not.
Yeah, I mean,
and that's the thing too, is like, yes, they're making money, but are they successful? Because how much money are they leaving on the table by not being good?
Yeah.
If they were just better, they would have crossed that $1 billion mark.
Well, and it's one of those things too, like, just because I can sell you a ticket the first time doesn't mean that you'll ever care about this again.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You know, yep. I mean, that's...
Well, they're even making a point that there's a different audience that went to see Wonder Woman that maybe didn't see BVS or anything else that will come see Wonder Woman in the next film.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because like, my critique towards Wonder Woman, I loved everything that was very far removed from the typical Snyder style of doing this. You know what I mean? Like, the first two acts of the film didn't feel like Snyder DC-verse stuff. You know what I mean? Snyderverse stuff. It felt like its own film. And then the third act felt like Snyderverse.
Well, and they got script credit, and some of their influence was felt, but I really... Because this is the first one that Jeff was more hands-on to as well, and I think that and I'm not going to take anything away from Patty, because
I should say, and we definitely have to drop Patty's name in this,
absolutely, because her fingerprints are all over that, but yeah. I think just the two different creative visions between Geoff Johns and Zack Snyder are very apparent in that film, and Paul, you're absolutely correct in those, that it's a hard line in that movie where you can see the difference.
So
she's going the distance,
but yeah, you know, again, I want to reiterate that obviously we have a lot of, you know, sorrow and compassion for the Snyders and what they're dealing with, and nobody likes to get kicked while they're down, and nobody should feel like they want to do that to them. But I really do feel like if Warner Brothers is distancing themselves because of professional reasons, it should be very abundant.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really clear that that's what they're doing. And because that, I think, will earn a lot of credibility back for the brand. And that'll be a big thing. And that's not to say, you know, that's not to say that the Snyders can't go on and make other films. And it doesn't mean that they can't be successful. I just think that this recipe didn't work. So let's try some other stuff and let's acknowledge that that's what it is.
And from a brand, from a business standpoint, I can agree that this recipe did not work. But I do want to be, from a fan base, clear that I'd watch the Snyderverse all day long. I personally enjoyed what he did. I liked what he did. I know it wasn't the fan service that most fans want, and I know business-wise they needed to go in a better direction, and I can get with that. I understand.
You're such a gaslighter. Why do you equate true to character to fan service? Why does that have to be true to source material? Why does that
have
to be fan service?
How many times have they we go through this argument every time, Chris? They've done 5 or 20 billion iterations of Batman, of Superman, of Wonder Woman. Every artist, every writer puts their own spin. Kevin Smith does his own run of whatever. I'm just saying,
and there are core principles. There are core principles that are always there. There is a truth to character in it.
That is effing unrealistic, and that's why I've always hated the Big Blue Boy Scout, because that would never, ever, 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 ever happen. So I liked this one. I felt connected to this Superman. He wasn't the Big Blue Boy Scout. He was a Superman, and that's why I liked it.
You're a monster.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really care about Earthlings. I should have let a busload of kids die.
Hold on.
I'm a man.
Gotta blow the whistle. We gotta break this up.
Ridiculous.
Pick your sticks back up, boys.
I can't believe I'm sparring with Michael Bay's fan club.
And losing at that.
I'm not losing. You're making horrible points. Hey.
Chris, what do we say on the Rock Gunna podcasting about the word not? I think you just admitted defeat, sir.
No. You say not all the time.
Never.
So moving on, this is interesting, because this is yet another franchise that has gone up and down. Definitely mixed reviews. I will say it's the Terminator franchise. And I will say there are definitely some movies I really enjoy in the Terminator franchise. I've watched them all. On the surface, as a generic sci-fi film, I've enjoyed them all. But I could absolutely say, no, there were some in this I didn't really care for, some I really did care for. Right now, this is straight from comicbookmovie.com. James Cameron sets his sights on a new Terminator trilogy to reinvent the franchise. I don't even care about the article. The headline was enough. Do we really want this? Wait. Or do we need to let this rest for a minute?
How is James Cameron going to do a whole nother Terminator trilogy when he hasn't finished the Avatar trilogy that he promised?
Like, because Entourage?
Avatar came out in like 2010. All right?
Yeah, something
it's
like that.
2017. What the...
Avatar 2 is in the works right now, right?
That's what I'm saying. Like, how is he even talking about something else right now? No, okay, so I'm going to tell you why I'm gun-shy about this. Two words. Alien Covenant. Another two words.
That's names. A new one, right?
The Ridley Scott, yes. Ridley Scott goes back to his previously successful but definitely floundered franchise, you know, where he had a legendary first film that really kicked everything off, and he literally pooped all over his work by going a completely different direction with it. Now, I'm just saying that, like, the tone of his two more recent films are completely different than the tone of that first film and then what was built on the back of that. You know, there's a lot of debate whether that's, you know, for better or worse. I tend to be in the camp of I think he just went back for the money. Especially with what happened with Neil Blomkamp's script for Alien 5 or 6 or whatever, which one they wanted to call it. And the fact that it got just DOA'd because
I haven't seen
Scott
Covenant.
Okay, well,
I actually liked the previous, Prometheus, I think it was.
Yeah, Prometheus.
I found that Prometheus fit into the Alien universe as a prequel.
It was definitely better than 3 and 4, but yeah, it's still
okay. But 3, I know I keep going back to this, but 3 had freaking underwater aliens, man. That is just cool. I mean, you just can't get past that. That is cool as crap. Or was it 4? It might have been 4. 4. But yeah, so I don't remember 3 at all. Then.
They swam. It was not like they were underwater specifically.
3 was the prison planet, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen
the
that
dog
one.
Alien, though, and that was. Yeah.
3 had the exploding, cooling, covered in metal alien, which was pretty cool.
So we're referencing effects versus story.
Well,
we're
talking
about Alien 1 and 2, we're talking about story.
Well, yeah.
Alien dogs are story, though, too. because that no, because it went into that mythos of the xenomorph and how they would
do everything,
take characteristics of whatever living creature that they gestated in.
God bless the rednecks of the universe.
Well, so in the same vein, this is why I have reservations about anybody going back to touch Terminator. Since Terminator 2, we've really gotten nothing but a string of soulless, you know, lip service to the franchise that had none of the core themes of those first two films, you know?
Agreed. They're fun moments, but yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Like Salvation, for example, what is that movie even? Like, yeah, it has the same concept of robots trying to destroy humanity, but it had
to be the wrap-up, I thought. Salvation was supposed to be what we never saw, which was the actual war.
But it was...
Yeah.
That movie was so unmemorable that the only thing I remember from it is Christian Bale's rant at the guy who was messing with the lighting.
Right?
You know what I mean?
That got leaked, yeah.
Like, that's... And the fact that Bryce Dallas Howard was in it. Like, that's all I remember. And I don't remember any of the actual plot. Like, it was such a... And I saw it. I saw it in the theater. You know what I mean? Like, I expected that to be a great film. And, yeah. So, if he's going to go back to this, he better be prepared to slam dunk it. And I have faith in Cameron, but I also feel like these guys who were successful 20, 25, 30 years ago, they get real high on the horse, and then they don't deliver. And that's how I feel about Ridley Scott. I mean, he's a genius. He's made some truly incredible films, but...
I don't know that James Cameron's on heroin, though.
Heroin? What? I said high on the horse.
Chris got it. Chris is chuckling. High on the horse.
Sorry. Anyways.
I digress.
I want to call that a dad joke, but it's got too
My big concern with James Cameron is that we're going to get too much Avatar and not enough actual Terminator. You know what I mean?
My honest only concern with it, and this would be with anything along these lines, is what did we see with Ghostbusters? You've got 25 years of memories to compete against. Not just the film itself, but the memories of the film. Mm-hmm. So if people love Terminator, that was 1981, 82, somewhere in there? I mean, it was early 80s. 84. So, I mean, I wasn't even 10 years old when that came out. So then you got Terminator 2, which was really pushing the line for graphics then, and the whole melt. It was amazing. And it had heart and soul, like you talked about. And you've got that, and you want to go reboot it now? Mm-hmm. Too soon, I think is the word.
It's not even just like, well, there was just the, there was a recent, the Genesis film recently.
Genesis. Yeah, with, Daenerys Targaryen.
I was going to say the same thing. I'm trying to remember.
I wish I remembered her name because it's rude not to, but I don't.
Clark is her last name. I don't remember her first name.
Michelle Clark Duncan?
No.
Now that's a dad joke. That's a bad one. That was stupid.
Terrible.
I am. But you know.
Stop it. Get some.
What about. So, Klotz, I'm terrible. And I would never get this opportunity. But if you ever got the opportunity to ask Harrison Ford a question, what would it be?
It would probably be something similar to what was asked of him at Comic-Con this past weekend, which was possibly the greatest Comic-Con question of all time. Have you made it your life goal to reboot every franchise you played a part in getting off the ground? Like Blade Runner. And his response was amazing. If you can look this up on YouTube if you haven't seen it, but his response was, "You're damn right it is." And that is such a Harrison Ford response. And it is really funny, you know, because obviously Star Wars, now Blade Runner is coming. I believe there's talks of them trying Indiana Jones again.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, we know. And the Han Solo film, technically, it's a prequel. But it's kind of the same. It's a cousin.
Yeah, the Han Solo film has like nothing to do with him, though. To be fair, like Harrison Ford, I mean.
Until the opening sequence of that movie is him and his eyes rolling backwards, falling off the bridge, and then it's just a flashback of his life.
No, Chris, no. Too soon, man.
Hold on a
too
second. I have the best response for this.
No.
Paul, did you see what I put on your page in response to that video? The comment I put on there?
No.
I said, once again, he shoots best. He shoots second, but he shoots best.
Oh, my goodness. That was great. But not everything out of Comic-Con was great. So this airline cannot get their tails out of the fire to save their lives. Another United Airlines story, right? This is not about beating passengers or being stuck on a tarmac or anything like that. United Airlines tried to ban comic books from leaving San Diego. And there's an actual, I right here, it's linked in the thing. And I thought it was clickbait headline. And that's not the headline. The headline says, tried to ban SDCC passengers from checking their books. And there's a picture of a United digital sign that says, United Comic-Con attendees remove all books from checked bags. That presumably is at the front desk when you go to check in to check your bag. And somebody tweeted this and tagged United Airlines on Twitter. And they said, please take note and share because you basically don't want to fly this airline. And a spokesperson says the restriction on checking comic books applies to all airlines operating out of San Diego this weekend. And this is an official United response that it was set by the TSA. Now, they did not tag the TSA. They just said it's set by the TSA. The official TSA response came within minutes saying, good afternoon. Please note there are no TSA restrictions on checking comic books or any other types of books, with a link to their site about what you can and cannot check. So United Airlines tried to say TSA was blocking comic books from a checked bag. I'm not talking about carry-ons. They wanted you to take all books out of your checked bag. Why? And then this is what they finally came back with. Packing these items in a checked bag often causes alarms, leading to bag searches. Comic books somehow often cause alarms, which can cause a significant slowdown in the screening process, leading to delays and bags possibly missing their flights. What?
Because of staples? I don't know.
And now they followed up with, well, we misunderstood TSA's instructions and regret any inconvenience. You would think, and this is going to play into our Niantic discussion later, you would think after one mistake, we really got to be on our toes, right? And actually, not even a mistake, but the whole social media getting slaughtered in the press thing. After the second mistake, you'd be like, no, seriously, guys, get your bleep together. I don't care what, if maybe it's a gun, maybe it's not. We'll take that chance. Let's keep our customers happy.
Pretty sure that's not how that works. But
well, no, but it could, because again, it's a checked bag. It can be a gun in a checked bag.
Chris is right. Chris is right. Technically, you're right. That's not where I was going, but you're right. But I think there's been other Twitter battles with Maria Menounos, or somebody was Twittering with them because she got bumped from a plane or pulled off the plane, not physically and beat up, but a celebrity was told to leave the plane for whatever reason. I don't know why. And she's, of course, blowing that up. And you would think the largest con of comics, I believe, in the world.
It is. No.
And your policy is not to warn your passengers ahead of time, but to just put up signs at the airport. Where you're flying home, so all you have is your bag, possibly a backpack on your back, and your suitcase that you're checking. Take your books out of your suitcase. So now I might miss my flight because I have to redo my bag and then get it checked. And how are these people not out of business at this point? I don't understand. It's just it boggles my mind, and so that's why I wanted to talk about, like, How, Chris, even a foil cover, how does that cause any kind of trigger
screen? I have no clue. I would love to see the data that went into that. So I'd have to research what happened last year that caused it.
Well, we misunderstood TSA. That would be, I mean, we here Giant Size Team Up, we're working on our own policies and procedures, this and that, the other. And we are making sure we understand them inside and out. We're making sure they read exactly the way we want them to read. We are crossing our T's, dotting the I's, and then passing it amongst other people to also cross the T's and dot the I's. But their statement is, we misunderstood the TSA instructions.
Okay, so here's
But your fellow airlines didn't. They're right next to you.
Here's what it said. Every year during Comic-Con International, our officers have issues with various items that people purchase and then either carry on or place in their checked bags. These come in the form of figurines, costume items, including replica and real weapons, and other mementos that generally alarm our checkpoint and checked baggage screening systems and result in a bag check. It's funny, there's two words that I didn't read in there.
Which were?
Comic book.
I know, right? The sign says, remove all your books.
Let's see. Okay, so here's brochures, magazines, and comic books. Pack items such as stacks of brochures and assorted comic books in your carry-on bag. Place them in a bin prior to sending them through the x-ray. Packing these items in checked bags often cause alarms leading to bag searches, which can cause sickness. So that's verbatim.
How?
It doesn't say why, but that is from TSA's 2016 blog.
But it doesn't say comic books. It says
that part did.
Pamphlets.
No, that part specifically said it said stacks of pamphlets and comic book and assorted comic books.
Who? What?
But
so
I don't
TSA
understand.
Says it.
Yeah, I don't understand what alarm that's setting off in a checked bag that isn't going to set it off twice as loud on a carry-on.
Here's the other thing. If it happens every year, then you have to plan for that in the flight and tell your passengers arrive 2 hours, 3 hours before flight, because it may take a little bit longer for your bags to go through. Hmm. I don't know. Klotz, you got anything on this?
I just don't. I feel like, all right, so if you're an airline and this is your concern, should you not warn everyone who books their return flight around the event of this, like, massively ahead of time? Now, granted, I realize a lot of people ignore stuff like that. Like, if you get an email that's like, hey, by the way, you're flying into and out of San Diego during Comic-Con, so you might be going to the con. Here's a whole bunch of stuff you should consider. I get that people will oftentimes ignore that kind of thing, but, like, there's got to be a way to communicate it so that your customers know what to expect. Mm-hmm. It sounds ridiculous to us that, like, the comic books would cause a problem, but we don't know what kind of equipment they use to scan, you know, baggage and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? It might interfere with that because it's a big solid block potentially, you know, even if you only got like 10, maybe 15 comic books or something, assuming you bought a handful, a good grip worth.
Yeah.
That could, you know, if they're using x-ray machines or something like that, that could ostensibly block, you know, something, and especially if you're talking about like weapons and stuff like that. And, you know, the thing is, like, yeah, you can have a firearm in your checked baggage, but it's got to be declared too. They have to know about it.
True. It has to have a lock. Yeah. In this other
stuff. So I can see why it could cause problems. You know what I mean? Like, it's comic books are of the size and shape where, like, maybe you could potentially hide a bomb behind them or something. You know what I mean? I get it. But communicate that to people so they know what to expect. But, you know, and it's just blindsiding them at the airport last minute, like, that just seems really, really silly. And then, like, kind of having a real BS attitude about your response to people's criticism about it. It's like, you guys aren't coming from a position where you get to have that attitude.
Yeah.
Calm down, Mr. Sassy Pants. Like, you guys beat the crap out of a man and dragged him off a flight.
Mm-hmm. And I'm 3 pages into Google. I searched airlines removed comics from checked bags. The only thing that's coming up is United. I cannot find any article that says JetBlue did it or Delta did it or anybody. Because I could get if it's a misunderstanding and two or three airlines did the same thing. Yeah, I get that the world just wants to hate on United. It's a punching bag. But right now, I cannot find any other article. Not saying it doesn't exist. I'm still, I wasn't there. I have no idea if the other airlines did it or not. But according to all the articles, 5 pages into the Google search, United Airlines is the only one who did it. So, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird. It's bad mojo. You know what? Maybe GSTU can make an offer on United Airlines and we'll get our own private airline.
Jeez. I don't think we want it. I don't think we want that.
I mean, you got to get to Comic-Con somehow, Klotz. It might be cheaper just to buy the airline than to get a ticket nowadays.
That's fair.
All right, coming up after the break, we got some Pokemon Go Fest stuff. We've got players being ungrateful, bleeps, and who knows where else we're going to go. So stay tuned to come back in just a minute, and we'll be back for you. And we're back. So where do we want to go first? We're going to talk about the players, or we want to talk about Pokemon Go Fest?
Go ahead and talk about Pokemon Go Fest, because we can talk about the other thing immediately after.
All right, so you can definitely go to Pokemon Go Podcast, and Ryan Ibbett and I recorded an episode today. Joe was on vacation. He was unable to be with us, but we talked in depth about my experiences there. There are videos on Pokemon Go Podcast on Facebook of live videos that were happening at the time. The top-down view is this, and I agree with what Klotz said, so I definitely want to quote you on that, is I believe Niantic is just out of their depth when it comes to tech. From a human standpoint, they had the fest set up, man. Except for the lines. The lines, they botched hard. They rolled all ones when they set up the lines. I've heard as long as 3 hours to get in from the line. Now, the Rock God rolls like the Rock God rolls. That took me 30 minutes to get in. And I got there 15 minutes before they opened the gates. And I still rolled in 30 minutes in. But that's because I had friends who were awesome enough to stand in line for me. But you roll in to the open area, to a nice, wide, beautiful open area where the will call is, and there's some bathrooms there and whatnot, and you've got a security checkpoint that funnels down to 4 or 5 lines. It's probably 8 lines because there's 4 tables. But each table has 2 security checkers on each side of the table. Problem is that... say I'm in the first position getting my bag looked into to make sure I'm not carrying any contraband, those kind of things. There's no room, me being big or small doesn't have anything to do with it. There's no room to get around me to get to the second checker. So the second checker is standing there waiting for the first person to clear out to then pull 2 more people in. That's happening on both sides of the table. So that's a very big choke point. And then you get in, stuff's going on. We'll talk about that in a minute. But you walk into this big, open, wide space where there's Boost Mobile on one side, Sprint on the other. You got your vendors, plenty of places to line up without blocking traffic. You go to the right, and there's all the Pokestops set up beautifully. Nice, shaded, cool areas to go into. Speakers everywhere so you can hear what's going on. To the left, you've got a huge open field with the main stage, and you've got your Valor, Mystic, and Instinct cooldown places. And each of those tents has its own concession stand, so you don't have to go. There's not just one concession stand. There's 4 now, and there's water stations everywhere. And they set this up to be as humanly accessible as possible. It was beautiful. They represented a bunch of different countries. They really made it a great place to be. I got in at 9:30. By 9:45, the tech wasn't working, and it did get better throughout the end of the day, but I never got to play the game while I was in the park. So that is the true gist of it. They did try to blame the cell services. Finally, 2 days ago, John Hankey came out and wrote an article about 2 of the 3 solutions were that they messed it up. One solution was, well, you overwhelmed the cell towers. I don't know. Maybe. I have a hard time believing that Chicago has less cell service coverage than Atlanta, because 88,000 people are going to be coming to Dragon Con, and my cell service never hiccups. Unless, I mean, yeah, deep in the heart of a building. That's going to happen just about anywhere. But there's no overloading the towers is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So they shut the show down. Basically, they were supposed to be – you could tell they had all kind of stuff planned all day long with DJs and hunts. The YouTubers are there to be interviewed and do different things. And after the first hunt window opened and failed miserably – then they did not do anything else show-wise on that stage the rest of the day. But being with the people, hanging out with Barry Falk and Zushari and Alberto and a bunch of other people, it was really cool to see the people, to see the community there, those who could play. I mean, they were excited when people were getting into raids later in the day. And I almost got into one. There's a video of it. And you've got 30, 40, 50 people standing around raiding this gym. Like 20 people at a time, right? They're all hitting it up. And everybody's, oh, I got him. I didn't get him. You know, that's what the dream is. That was what they're selling. And I think if they would, Rob Roberts said this on OLR Radio, but I think if they would sell, if they would, or at least get a controlling interest party in there, like Google. I know they were with Google before, but Google needs to be back in as a tech partner. You're somebody who understands the high ends of tech, who has the endless pockets, if you will, the deep pockets to fund whatever happens has to happen to keep the fans happy. I think, man, if that had clicked, I told Ibbot today, this fest would have been on par with the very first Woodstock, because the dream they were selling almost happened. Is the people showed up, we're all happy together, and can you imagine? I mean, going in to play this game, raiding all day long, catching stuff you can never catch anywhere else, hit, you know, just play after play after play with the people. It would be the videos that they keep promoting and pushing out. And I think it would have been the most epic fest. As it was, I think John Hankey took his punch as well. And I think the idiot effing sportscaster, whatever, esports, whatever hoo-ha she was the biggest mistake they ever made in her life. Because even at the end of the festival, Chris, you're alive. You're alive watching my video of it. Is they come out, yeah, we're sorry, it's been a long day, you're getting $100 in coins, you're getting your refund on your badge, and we're going to tell you a little bit more here now. And she just goes back to this idiotic script that she memorized of, all right, let's look at those charts and see what you caught here in the park. And people start booing because we didn't catch crap in the park. At best, in reality, at best, I'm going to be generous and say 50% of the people were playing by the end of the day. And I think that's an overstatement. I know midday it was less than a third we're able to play. So, you know, we didn't catch anything in the park, not as a whole. And so they could have just cut the crap and stopped treating us like we're stupid and just say, hey. And, man, when they announced, because I even saw it on the live stream, and I don't know where you were watching it, Joe. Joe was not with Chris, because I know my stream cut out because I did move. See, there was a spot in the park where I lost service, but the majority of the park I was 100%. And that's where I did most of my video stuff from. So at the end of the day, I moved to a spot where the video ended. But when she announced that we're, you know, you want to know what the mystery challenge is? It's legendaries. And the crowd's like, yeah, no crap. Except they didn't say crap. You know, and she's jumping up and the mystic caught the most. And the only real cheer that happened all day long was when they said we would all get Lugias. For free in our account for being there. And everybody went, even I got happy. I mean, I flipped the camera around. I was like, okay, I'm happy. And I think I said Chris could suck it or something like that. So that's the top-down view. There's a lot more details that played into that. Go check it out on Pokemon Go podcast. But overall, Niantic needs somebody to help them with the tech. And if they can get this tech down, this is the new revolution, without a doubt, in gaming.
Honestly... who I think they need to bring on board is just for somebody to say, you know, I can navigate you through these because I've been through this, is Justin Woods. They need to bring him on.
Yes!
Because it's like I told you that what should have happened with that Lugia is they should have just taken PvP9 and given everybody Angel is what should have happened. Everybody, whether you were at the fest or not, they should have just given Lugia to everybody. Because that your guys' performance in that park was supposed to be
right
what influenced the rest of the world. So Niantic was like, yeah, what they did in the park doesn't really matter, and we're going to show you live the world that we're going to lie just to prop up this bad system.
Yeah. I mean, did the whole meters and everything. It's like, no.
And stop. That's at the point where I was like, okay, this is where you just need to make it right with the world. And everybody get Lugia, but then everybody has to figure out how to get the other legendaries.
You know, so then I did totally miss out, although, on my free Articuno, because I was at the airport at 7 o'clock, which was outside the radius of where they were launching them, and they launched just a bajillion Articuno and Lugia events and raids, and it's 100% catch. So of course there were still thousands of people downtown, so you were raiding like constant. I mean, Barry Falk texted me at the airport. I'm like, dude, stop texting me. You're pissing me off. He had 6 Articunos. All right. And these, for those who don't play Pokemon Go, these are legendary birds. They're supposed to be super hard to get. But as part of their I'm sorry, they flipped the switch, but only in that zone. So everybody who was still in that zone basically got them for free. But I still haven't gotten one. You know, and I still am going to have that 3% catch rate when I go to get one. But it was a great example of a visionary who has a great idea for a game but can't run the tech, putting on a real world festival. It's like, now you've got to get the tech right first. And he did come out and say my answer was right, because everybody's like, no, it's Verizon. It's just like, no, they locked us in a geo-locked area on the computer. We had our own servers, basically. They had security measures in, so you had to have a QR code and spend a special stop inside the park and then scan that QR code, and then you're unlocked and you're in that park. That's the place that the stuff wasn't working. The second you got out of that geo-lock, your stuff worked again. I mean, I got two blocks away, and I was playing the game like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, no, they have a problem. They did not anticipate how the hell they were going to pull this off, and they just crossed their fingers and hoped the spaghetti stuck to the wall, and it didn't.
Right.
So now I think there were some assholes there for sure. I mean, there's plenty of awesome people. Plenty of people had fun, stuck around, were nice about it. Well, let's do what we can. Let's figure things out. I ended up playing with my gacha, which is basically an automatic device I wear on my wrist that was able to throw and spin. But I could not get the game to come up for more than 10 seconds. So I could get it long enough to connect, darken the screen, and then I'd play for 5 minutes, catching whatever I could catch, and I couldn't see it. Other people had better luck. But there's one guy's doing a video with a fan of the show, and this guy comes in right behind us, points at the camera, and goes, "Riot at 7 o'clock, which is when the fest ends. And just his buddy just kind of pushes him on, like, come on, keep moving. And I did tell the group I was with, like, look, I've worked enough of these festivals, and I've been to enough of rock concerts to know all it's going to take is a few assholes to set this off. My advice, because I wasn't going to stay till 7 anyway, I had to get on a plane. But my advice to you is stay as far back from the stage as you can. Because if they try to push this off and it doesn't go, because they were going to do the legendary hunt at 6 o'clock. And if they try to force that out and it doesn't go off, all it's going to take is two or three people after this long day of frustration and the heat and just not being in your right mind sometimes, there's going to be problems, is all I'm going to say. And fortunately, Niantic realized that too. And basically at 4:30 cut it off and just said, no, we're not doing it. Here's stuff. You're welcome to stay here till 7. We've expanded this stuff out, blah, blah, blah. But overall, I had fun. I had fun. I enjoyed seeing the people and hanging out. I wish I could have played more. I ended up playing some in the city before I left. And I really think, I'll say it one last time, and I'll shut up about it. You get the right partner, or you sell, or this game is going to die in a year or less, because you keep having tech issues, and it's a tech game. But don't sell to Disney, because they'll shut the damn game down.
So Pokemon Go Fest in Chicago was a big hit, and Charles was 100% satisfied.
There were no explosions, so I give it a 4.
What Charles was so fulfilled by was feeling like he was playing Marvel Avengers Alliance again. So when that game closed down, there was a hole left in all of our hearts.
There was.
And there was. At the fest, Charles felt that hole be filled again with with lightly salted disappointment.
He got to live the last 30 minutes of PvP all day.
Oh, dang! Except I had cool people to help me have fun. So,
it's funny you mention that, because my follow-up topic here is I play a mobile game. I play a couple mobile games, but one of the mobile games, I play three different, currently, Japanese gacha games, which are basically, you know, like you get premium currency to roll for characters, and two of them are based on anime, and one of them is a Final Fantasy title. The one that I play a lot, Bleach Brave Souls, has something kind of similar going on right now, where it's the 2-year anniversary, super hyped up, you know, like real big deal. They have all this stuff going on. And the way I put this into our show notes, the topic line was players being ungrateful bleeps. Because what I'm seeing in the community for this game that I'm playing is they gave us a complete, like, as part of the 2-year anniversary, they gave us a free 10-character pull, which is a big deal, as at the beginning of what's called these step-ups. They gave us a completely maxed out maxed, max level, you know, skill tree, everything maxed out, chance at a character. You would choose one of the five colors in the game, and you got five different characters to choose from that were randomly determined. They could be holiday exclusives. They could, you know, anything that had come out in the first 2 years of the game, basically. They gave a whole bunch of other stuff worked in, but community is super salty because they're trying to pull for this one particular unit, this new unit, the only new one in the current banner, because these step-ups aren't as good as they were a year ago when they were just absolutely insane. Like, basically, the company was giving everything away that wasn't nailed down a year ago. And there's all these crazy connectivity issues with the game during peak times because so many people are not only just playing the game for the anniversary event and doing all the stuff that's going on with the anniversary event, but we also have people who are re-rolling accounts, which means that they basically just keep deleting their data and starting a new account over and over and over again to try to get, you know, out of all the freebies that they're giving away, the best possible start to a new account. Some of these people are just doing it just to do it because they want to see what they'll get. Like, it's craziness. So we've had connectivity issues where, like, it's hard to do some of the missions and stuff because being a mobile game, it's got to connect to the servers every time it starts and finishes a mission. There's online co-op multiplayer that you just can't connect to sometimes, all this stuff. And, like, you know, the company's basically like, all right, we're aware of it. We're trying to fix it, but we don't have a solution yet. You know, and so they've been working on it and they're like, we're going to compensate you for it. Now, that's a really popular theme in these Japanese games in particular. When they have server issues, they almost always give you something for free. And very often it amounts to like a free pull on the gacha or whatever that's going on at the moment. The community is still salty, even though they've acknowledged that they're going to give stuff away for free as compensation, because they're like, oh, it's probably going to be like nothing of any worth. And they're like, no, we're going to give you something decent, and we're going to give you something decent because, and we're not going to do it yet, because that's the other thing is people are impatient about it, until we fix the problem, because otherwise it would be completely pointless for us to give you,
yeah,
you know, compensation for an issue that we haven't solved, basically. You know what I mean? So it's been really interesting watching that happen, because like, I see like these people who are like really, really salty about not getting the one specific character they want on a banner that has 12 different characters they could possibly
play. Right. Okay.
And the way it works in these gacha games is the max rarity characters are usually only like one of the games I play, they're only a 1% pull rate. This game in particular is they're a base 3%, but in this current event they're up to 6% at max rate up. Like, they're low percentages, and people are just salty. And so, and it's like, you knew what you were getting into. I play this game completely free. I don't spend a cent on this game. And I have things beyond my wildest dreams. Like, I get stuff on a regular basis. You know what I mean? Things come to you eventually, one way or the other. You know what I mean? And I just kind of, like, it really struck me, you know, with people being like, so ungrateful, like so entitled, you know what I mean? And I hate to use that word because that word gets thrown around a lot, you know what I mean? And I think it gets thrown around falsely a lot and unfairly. But these people are just genuinely upset, even though they've been given the equivalent of hundreds of dollars of free stuff. Like if you were to buy the currency to get all this stuff and the time and effort that would go into like the max character and everything, you know. In that regard, it's not all that different than MAA was, where it was just this really deep game with lots of grinding. But yeah, on the flip side, another game that I'm playing currently, Fortnite, is in early access. It just came out. It's going to be a free to play game eventually, but it has paid early access right now. That game, the community's kind of split. Because, and I'm actually on the opposite side of the issue where I'm frustrated with the game, because the key progression in that game is locked behind premium currency stuff. So like the game is basically it's a combination of like your survival crafting style game, like a Minecraft type thing, but also with tower defense building. So you go gather things out in, you know, in a mission area with up to three other people. You build defenses, and then, you know, you protect objectives and stuff like that. And you, you know, you can get higher quality schematics to build better weapons, and you can get, you know, higher quality heroes to play, and, you know, support characters and all this different stuff. But everything's kind of tied behind this premium currency. And so it feels very pay to win right now. Like, it's like, if you want to get the best stuff in the game, and we're not talking cosmetics, we're talking like, if you want to get the guns and the melee weapons that deal the most damage, you're probably going to want to throw some money into the game, because otherwise it's just this long, tedious grind with only a little bit of trickle of this stuff. And it's all RNG anyways, because it's all loot crates and stuff. And it's interesting because I find myself on the opposite side of the argument as I was with the mobile game that I play, where I'm like, this is probably not so good because it's not good for the health of the game in the long run. You know what I mean? And so I just wanted to highlight this whole thing. I just ranted for like 5 minutes here.
I ranted for five. Klaus got five. Chris, I don't know if he has anything to rant about.
Well, what I want to sum this up with is, in gaming in particular, please, for the love of God, try to maintain some sanity and find a middle ground. When things are frustrating and you can't, like, if you can't log into a game or you can't get through your PvP or your missions or whatever it happens to be, understand that, you know, you can't just flip a switch and solve those problems. You know what I mean? But also on the flip side, like, hold the companies accountable. You know, when they screw up, if they try to, you know, not hold themselves accountable, by all means, give them polite, measured feedback, as we used to say in the FDH days. You know, it was a very interesting observation. And it's really funny because I see that in the wake of you going to the Pokemon Go event.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you bought a plane ticket and flew from Atlanta to Chicago. I imagine you were pretty disappointed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say I had some reservations about the money that was spent for the experience that I got. I don't regret it, but, you know, coming home knowing the fan. Now, I will say the fans provided a lot. I didn't put a whole lot out of my own pocket for this. The fans did the majority of it, and I very much appreciate them. And that's why I have no regrets in going, because they stepped up and said, no, we want to help you get there, and we want to help take care of it. But there was some of the money that came from my wife from the situation with her mom. She inherited some money. And now I, you know, like, man, if I come back going, oh my God, it was the best thing ever, everybody's happy. But with the public issues that happen, I have definitely had second thoughts going, sometimes I kind of go, I wish I hadn't taken that money from her. So that, not that it's a problem in the household, it's just in my mind. No, so you're right, Klotz. You're right. There's a little bit of, you know, after the fact, second thought, but honestly, with the friendships I made and the adventure I had, I wouldn't have traded it for the world. But yeah, there's, I would have liked more.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the one takeaway is this is the first of their events planned for the summer. So hopefully things will go better in Europe where the rest of the events are planned for, and hopefully they won't be on, you know, PvP season 27 and still having the same issues that they had from the very first PvP. Hopefully lessons will be learned and corrections will be made.
That's what we set out to do with everything we do on Giant Size Team Up. Not just breaking the pinball on Giant Size Team Up, is to change the negativity and lead with positivity. Because you could, Ib and I were called apologists at some point. We were raked over the coals at first, and we very certainly went, go screw yourself. Because while we'll pick out the parts of the game we didn't like, there's still humans behind it. There's still things going on. And that's something I say about Pokemon Go is it's so freaking cutting edge that I think they need to slow the hell down a little bit and not try to plan a fest at the 1 year anniversary when you cannot yet to date drop any level of update and not have it be a rock in the pond with a bunch of ripples that take days to fix. Mm-hmm.
And when you're still, how are you having a fest when you're effectively still in beta?
Exactly. When you're early launch and you're so, nobody's done this before. Nobody. So you're leading the pack, and I can sympathize with that. I've been on the edge of podcasting since it started. And even then, I've got podcasters who are like, you want to do what? That's crazy. I'm like, no, give it 5 years. You'll get there. It's fine. It just irritates me, but it slow down. And that's the lesson I had to learn was slow down. Be only a few steps ahead of the curve, not 20. Because when you're 20 steps ahead of the curve, which this game really seems to try to be, you are out in the middle of nowhere, and the wolves can tear you apart. And Klotz, it ties right into what you're saying about that negativity of the people who just want everything. God, Chris, we saw this all the time on MAA, where, well, that's not good enough. They gave everybody Archangel. I want more. Where's my stuff now? Or you know, they drop a whole mission, which was designed to take you weeks to play through. Somebody blasts through it in 48 hours and start railing and ranting that there's not enough to do in the game. You know, there's people who bought scalped tickets to Pokemon Go Fest for $500 a pass when it was $20 a pass. Those people do not get their money back. The scalpers get the money back for $20. And they had to be furious, right?
Man, they just...
But it's on you.
They just got $20 back. Wow.
I
they
know.
They sold nothing.
Yep.
They literally sold nothing.
I know. And that's the thing. And there's a lawsuit. I saw this come up after we did the show today. There's a class action lawsuit going around to sue Niantic. It's like, yeah, good luck with that. Because they did, as a company, they did everything they could in their power.
If they refunded your price of admission, I mean.
Done. Right? And not just that. If you proved you were in the park, which was easy to do, and they even made it even easier to do because there were still people having issues in the park. When they expanded it out to the city, they expanded the Pokestops out there. You had to have a special stop, specially coded stop. So they expanded the specially coded stops out into the city. So if you spun it, it would ask you for a QR code. And if you didn't have it, you would just play normally. But if you had the code, it would unlock all the goodies for you, including $100 worth of coin, which is the max amount of coin you can get in the game, 14,500 coins in the game. For there's no lawsuit here, and the people that you're talking about just starting things to get stuff and just raising hell, you're why games fail. I'm just gonna say it. Why games fail.
Well, that kind of stuff just contributes to, like, what I'm facing in the mobile game I'm playing, is that people are upset because they don't have good connectivity. And like I'm in a Discord community for that game, and people are like, "Man, it's bad now." Like right around like daily refresh time and stuff like that. And then you've got people who come in and be like, "Yeah, I just re-rolled my fifth account and I got this. Should I keep it?" And it's like,
fifth,
dude, know your audience because you're contributing to this problem that we're all having, you know. And none of us can fully enjoy the new content and everything because you're just kind of greedy, to be honest. Like, there are people who have perfectly serviceable accounts, you know what I mean, with lots of great characters, and they're just like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna go re-roll a bunch of times and see what happens. And it's just this whole thing, you know. It's like, I don't know, I don't want to tell people what to do to have a good time or whatever, but sometimes it's just frustrating. Because it's like, well, you're contributing to the big thing that you're all upset about and that you expect compensation for, among other things, you know what I mean?
Put a pin in that, Klotz. Pass the plate, man. We're gonna take an offering. That was it right there. I guess, you know what, that's a good place to need to leave it, because that was spot on right there.
Yeah, I say is amazing.
so would you say that Travis Jones is amazing?
He's okay. I mean, we've had better.
Oh man, God! I look forward to seeing him at Dragon Con. It's gonna be so much fun. But we're gonna give a big shout out to our friend Travis Jones, who is a beautiful and loving, cuddly teddy bear of a muscled up man. On our network, Blazing Defender Report is his show, and he is a great part of the Giant Size Team Up Network. You want to know about the comic book pool of the week? You want to know about how the books tie into the movies? You just want to have a good old fun time with a whole lot of not safe for work energy? Then you need to tune in to Travis Jones and Blazing Defender Report. Check it out, GiantSizeTeamUp.com, and check him out on Facebook. He's got he's got so many great videos and stuff up there. The man does not have a fearful bone in his body. He will just walk up to any comic book artist he can find and talk to them, and it's amazing. So he's over there, Blazing Defender Report. Check all of our stuff out. Email us, btp@giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to hear from you. You can go to giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel to leave a speak pipe. There's a tab right there on the side. You can leave your voicemail for the show. We'd love to hear from you. And find us on iTunes and patreon.com/breakingthepanel. I think that is it for now. So tune in next week to hear Chris Wisdom say.
Great. And I, he's okay.
I can't wait to watch him tear your arms off and drag him
down. I've never gotten to see an atomic wedgie in real life, Travis. I'm just begging for it for Chris. Just underwear up over the head, man. That's all I want to see. I'm a grown man.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.